putting a hand to his still warm skin, and closed his eyes. Those warm, laughing eyes that would laugh no more. And she knelt there in the pool of blood until someone pulled her away. She'd drawn her strength around her like a protective blanket. Her mother and sisters had flocked to her side, but it was Maggie who had comforted them in their tears, and Maggie who had taken over the arrangements and assured her family that it would eventually be all right. And curiously enough, she now thought, turning again in their bed that she hadn't been able to part with, it was all right. For the first month, when she'd returned to New York, she'd slept on the couch rather than face the bed she'd shared for too short a time with Mac. But before long, she'd exerted common sense, and now she was glad she'd kept the bed. She could remember Mac with warmth and joy and love, but she had the sorrow away where it belonged. Better to have loved and lost, she often told herself, taking comfort in the old cliche. It was 3 a.m. She could hear the never-ending New York City traffic outside her apartment, a constant companion to her nights. Most of the time, she slept soundly, untroubled by dreams. But every now and then, when her strength was at low, she'd awaken in the darkness and remember. And fresh pain would sear through her. Then she'd have to remind herself once again, better to have loved and lost. Tomorrow she'd be in Chicago, taking her first vacation in 2 years. Her sister Kate needed her, and Maggie was never one to ignore someone's needs. It must have been the thought of Chicago that had started it again, she thought, burrowing down beneath the cool cotton sheets. Mac had grown up on Chicago's mean streets. Maggie had managed to avoid it since his death, but Kate needed her, and she could avoid it no longer. Blood is thicker than water, she thought, adding another cliche to the pile. How tediously trite and maudlin she was getting in her old age. She rolled over on the bed and stared up into the darkness that surrounded her like a shroud. There was one more cliche, and it was by far her favorite. Better to light one candle than to curse the darkness. And she leaned over and turned on the bedside light. 1.
There's a dead man in my bathtub.
Maggie just stood there and looked at her younger sister, Kate, standing in the doorway of her Chicago apartment. Kate had always been the practical one, the calm, steady, efficient one. She was the only daughter who hadn't inherited the infamous aquamarine eyes. Instead, hers were plain brown, unblinking, nice, but definitely brown. Her hair was brown, too. Her face was attractive but nondescript, and she dressed more with propriety than with imagination. Fair isle sweaters and discreet pearls were her style, more than the urban guerrilla chic that Maggie favored. But at that moment, standing barefoot in the doorway of her apartment, her brown hair a tangled mass around her pale face, her usually calm brown eyes were completely panicked. What did you say? Maggie asked, still staring at her sister in bemusement.
I said there's a dead man in my bathtub. Don't just stand there, Maggie, she shrieked,
her usually even tones thrown to the four winds.
Come in and help me.
She grabbed Maggie's arm and dragged her into the apartment with strength that was surprising, given that she was shorter and more fragile than her sister.
Calm down, Kate, Maggie said, automatically efficient. Sit down and explain to me what the hell is going on. Where's the baby?
I took her downstairs to Mrs. Gilliam.
She babysits for her. Maggie, I don't want to talk about my domestic arrangements.
Her voice was rising again. Maggie pushed her down onto one of the overstuffed sofas in the stylish living room.
And I don't want to hear about your domestic arrangements, she agreed. I want you to tell me about the man in your bathtub. But first, I think you need a drink.
Maggie! But Maggie had already left her, heading down the narrow corridor to the huge old kitchen with its mammoth ice-making refrigerator. She'd always liked the apartment Kate had shared with her husband. It was huge and pre-war, with wonderfully elegant spaces that had taken to modernization with enthusiasm. No expense had been spared, and the place was a showpiece. At least Brian had left her with that much. She poured each of them a generous glass of whiskey, added a token cube of ice, and headed back to the living room. She detoured to check the bathroom.